Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, good Monday afternoon to each and every one of you, wherever you might be out there in Stand in the Gap territory. On behalf of Dave Kistler and Sam Rohr, I am Gary Dahl, and we had Dave with us a moment ago, but suddenly he has disappeared. Sam, you're with us. You're somewhere between here and there, aren't you, my friend?
Somewhere between here and there is a big area, Gary, but I am. I am on the border between New Jersey and Pennsylvania at the moment, and but it's always great to be able to join wherever we're calling from here. So, yes,
that is modern technology. And I understand Dave's back with us. Right, David?
Gary, I am.
And where might you be today?
Well, Gary, this week, and certainly today because of this week, I am in Champaign, Illinois.
And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, if you are relatively new to this particular program, we want to remind you that Dave Kistler is an evangelist, and he may be anywhere from who knows where to who knows where on a consistent basis. And for many, many years, he and I have been working together on a radio program. And he just calls in from wherever he is, and we do thank the Lord for modern technology. Actually, most of you don't realize it, but in reality, as this program is coming to you today, and normally this is the case for the program daily, we are in four separate locations. And most of the time it sounds like we're in the same studio, but we are in four separate locations, and that is the due to modern technology, to which we are thankful. And again, it's just a delight to have you there by the radio, and trust that you had a great weekend, a great Lord's Day, and we're looking forward to another week of programming here on Stand in the Gap Today. And Sam, I want to begin today with a press release that was sent out by the American Pastors Network, and of course, most of it was written by you. It's you're quoted in this particular press release. And the topic says, regardless of outcome, American Pastors Network says marriage decision will have lasting effects. And, of course, what we're talking about is the situation before the United States Supreme Court. We encourage folks to continue to pray for what's taking place down there as it relates to this idea of same-sex marriage. We encourage pastors to preach on the subject. This is very, very crucial right now. And in the press release that went out, Sam, you are quoted as saying, the fact that this issue even made it to the Supreme Court of the United States is an indictment against American Christians and against American churches. For too long, instead of being salt and light in the culture, our churches and, sadly, many of our pulpits have aimed to simply blend into the culture, not changing it, but being changed by it. Now the very institution of marriage literally stands on trial, and regardless of how the court rules, this fact alone must serve as a wake-up call for the American church. Then you go on to say, Sam, this is just the beginning. And as the culture continues to change and move further away from the truth of God's word and from our constitutional roots, it is crucial that pastors and churches know the truth, speak the truth, and live the truth, not just on Sundays, but 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's interesting that that, in essence, was what I preached upon last week, a week ago, yesterday, in my pulpit at the Faith Baptist Church of Altoona, and goes right along with what you're saying there, Sam. I'd just like to have your comments on this. It's absolutely true what you said, and but since you wrote this, I think our people would do well to hear any further comments that you'd like to make on it.
Well, Gary, I'm glad to do that. Yeah, I mean, we sent that out, obviously trying to, we do press releases every Monday that go nationally, and provides an opportunity for those of us in the Pastors Network to be able to express some of these points like this, which oftentimes our people are not hearing. And the reason we sent that out and made that quote that I did is because, in fact, it is true. And if our people those who love freedom in this nation, Gary and Dave, and Christians in particular, who we know before God hold the key to whether or not this nation returns back to a biblical basis or allowed to flow down the stream and to be totally washed away, that has to be said. And the fact of the matter is, many people don't like to hear the fact that there is a place where we can go to say there is a reason why we've gotten where we are, and there is also a way that we can get back. And that is what we're saying, and we say through the Pastors Network, is that the communication of biblical truth is what sets clear this culture of lies and deception. Without it, there is no clarification. There is no recalibrating of a very, very broken media, a broken culture, a corrupt, increasingly corrupted government structure. Without that, and the primary position who has the responsibility before God to put forth that truth with the intent of persuading, informing, and persuading people is the pastor in the pulpit. That's a God-given responsibility. And until that happens, Gary, I believe that we will not be able to turn things around. But if that does happen, there is great power and there's great influence. I mean, salt, when it's actually applied to corrupting flesh and sores and that kind of thing, it does heal, but it does no good sitting in a bottle. So that's why I said what I said. Being a Christian means 24 hours a day. It's what we think about when we are in private. It's what we do. It's what we think in our hearts. And it's 24 hours a day. We can't pick and choose when we're going to act like a Christian and talk nicely and when we choose to go and act like the world. Gary, the segmentation of faith is really what this is all about, and it is the solution, and that's why we sent that out. So I really appreciate you bringing it up today for the sake of our listeners.
Well, Sam, you make a statement there. You say, sadly, many of our pulpits have aimed to simply blend into the culture, not changing it, but being changed by it. And, of course, on this program, we've talked numerous times on how or why it is, or about the fact that pastors do not preach the whole counsel of God. My question to you along this line is, when did pulpits stop proclaiming truth and start blending into the culture, and why, in your estimation?
Well, Gary, I don't know. I mean, some would disagree on this because I think that even in our own nation, culture has ebbed and flowed. I mean, let's face it, historically we've had major revivals in our nation about every 50 years. And when you read those stories about the decadence of society in this nation and the brokenness of homes and so forth, I mean, it's been around for a long time. I think it occurred shortly after the turn of the century, Gary, somewhere in that neighborhood.
That is the turn of the last century, I'm guessing?
That is correct, yes, last century.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll talk a little bit more about this and some other pertinent issues, and so we would encourage you to stay tuned to Stand in the Gap today from the American Pastors Network. We will be back with more right after this. So as I said, stay tuned.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing, as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America, using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
This is Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, and I'm thrilled to announce that BJU Press, the Christian homeschool curriculum leader, has come alongside APN as a national sponsor of Stand in the Gap today. Together, we share a commitment to further a true biblical worldview and to follow Jesus' command to be salt and light to the culture. BJU Press provides academically sound educational materials designed to fully equip children for college and the workplace. As postmodern culture seeks to eliminate God from the classroom, BJU Press integrates biblical truth into curricula that's accurate, dependable, and exceeds all national academic standards. APN welcomes BJU Press as a national partner and sponsor of Stand in the Gap today. If you're a parent and want to find out more, visit BJU Press online at bjupresshomeschool.com or by calling 800-845-5731. Again, we at APM welcomes BJU Press as a national partner as together we work to instill Christian values in the generations to follow.
Hi, this is Carla Dedesi, author of the Julia Learns book series and host of Your Family Matters here at 1180 WFYL. Let's make 2015 the year that we read quality books to our children, the future leaders of this country. Please start with my book series, Julia Learns How to Vote Wisely and Julia Learns How to Marry Wisely. Julia Learns How to Vote Wisely is instructing our children to vote with conservative values and the importance of planting those seeds deeply into our children's hearts at an early age. Julia Learns How to Marry Wisely is planting seeds deeply for truth and nobility and righteousness that we see in traditional marriage. They are the only books that are sharing this message with our children, the future leaders of the United States of America. And please keep a lookout for a third book that will be launched this April 2015, Julia Learns How to Protect Life Wisely. Remember, today's readers are tomorrow's future leaders.
The Julia Learns series can be purchased as ebooks, printed books, and on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other Christian retailers.
Hi, this is Nancy Becker, the Recorder of Deeds in Montgomery County. I'd like to read a quote from Mark Twain. In the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man and brave and hated and scorned. When his cause succeeds, the timid join him, and then it costs nothing to be a patriot.
A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government. Taken from Thomas Jefferson's first inaugural address, March 4th, 1801.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and Stand in the Gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, in the last segment, we were talking about the fact that many times pastors in their pulpits have aimed to simply blend into the culture, not changing the culture by the way that they preach the Word of God. And keep in mind that here at the American Pastors Network, we often talk about the concept of developing a biblical worldview and then making an impact for Christ in the culture. And a lot of that comes from the pulpit. And yet, as we've talked about many times, in many places, in many churches, the pulpit is silent on this type of a thing. Tied into that, of course, right now is this idea of the United States Supreme Court going to make a decision with regard to same-sex marriage, and we talked about that extensively last week. And we sent out the challenge for pastors to preach on the subject, to lead their congregation in prayer on the subject. And, of course, at the Faith Baptist Church of Altoona, where I pastor, we did that last Wednesday night. We did it yesterday morning. I preached on the concept of marriage from the biblical perspective. And then, of course, at the end of the service, we invited people to come forward and unite around the altar to pray for the Supreme Court. And we will continue to do this because we never know how the Supreme Court justices have decided yet. If they have decided, they could change their mind. And we're just asking God to work in their lives in such a great way. But a related subject, Sam and Dave, is the idea that pastors not only need to preach from the Word of God in a strong way over the pulpit, but there's been a lot of talk recently about the idea of pastors running for office. And that if pastors ran for office, that would have the potential, number one, to bring truth into the governmental scene. Not only that, but it might even encourage more evangelicals to get out and vote. And we understand that coming up soon, there's going to be more than 300 pastors gathering together to take some training on how to run for school board, city council, the state house, and Congress. And I personally think that, you know, that's a good idea. And we find that today, it appears, is that more pastors are getting involved in running for government than maybe in a long, long time. Somebody told me that there are more pastors in Congress today than there has been in a long, long time. Dave Kistler, what do you think about this? You know, here at the American Pastors Network, we have what we call the Ministers Together Initiative. Do you think that the height of the Ministers Together initiative that we have here at the American Pastors Network would be where pastors would also not just preach the truth from the pulpit, but be willing to run for office so that they can take the message of truth into various aspects of government, whatever it may be? Is that a valid fact that some pastors could consider?
Gary, I think it is. Just because you're a pastor doesn't mean you have to check your role as pastor in at the door to run for what we call a political office. In fact, Gary, here at the American Pastors Network, we don't like using the term politics. We prefer to use the biblical term, or the more accurate term, I guess I should say, which is civil government. And God is the author of civil government. So to suggest, as some will no doubt, you know, attempt to do, if pastors get more involved in the process of running for office, some will say, well, that's a violation of the First Amendment, separation of church and state. A pastor shouldn't be involved in quote-unquote politics. Others would say, you know, because it is quote-unquote politics, it's a dirty arena, a pastor shouldn't be involved. Gary, all of those are very invalid arguments. It's not politics, it's civil government, and a pastor has every bit of a right to be involved in the political process or the governmental process as anyone else. And since it's God's institution, then I believe preachers, by very definition, ought to be involved. We would not say that a pastor shouldn't be involved in God's institution of the home, or God's certainly institution of the church. That is the place where pastors are most involved. But to say that likewise they should not be involved in God's third institution, civil government, is totally incorrect. So Gary, I'm encouraged by what I'm hearing. I'm encouraged by this emerging interest. I think it's long overdue for pastors to participate in a more direct way.
Sam, as an individual who, of course, has been involved with government for many, many years, and now as a preacher, you're preaching all across the country and even around the world. In some occasions, you're delivering the message of the truth of God. We talk about this idea of using the word political involvement or governmental involvement. Brother Dave brought that up. We've talked about that, you know, as it were, in not on the air here at the American Pastors Network. And so often today we hear people in the pew and pastors in the pulpit saying, you know, the church has no right getting involved politically. We stress the importance here at APN of being involved governmentally. And I think that we have a clear understanding as the difference between what the difference between those two words are. But I'm just wondering if you might take some time and expand on the difference between saying I'm involved politically, or let's make it personal, that APN is involved politically because we're not a political organization. What's the difference in saying that we would be involved politically with the fact that we are involved governmentally?
Gary, I think I'm going to pick up a little on what Dave said there a little bit and fine-tune it perhaps just a little bit more. Absolutely, the word political is not a biblical term. It's something that we call the art of being involved in civil government. But in reality, the reason that pastors should be involved from the standpoint of preaching and teaching and looking for, frankly, people within their congregations who may have the giftedness or who may actually be taught to understand the calling, which I believe it is, for someone being in office, in that, in fact, it is in every bit biblical. I like to use the word authority. Authority really is the same word as government. But if we put authority in place, understand that, Christ said in Matthew 28, all authority, or he could put in their governments, have been given unto me in heaven and earth. The concept of authority and or government from a perspective comes from God himself, and he put it in the home. He put it in self-government, we call it, but it's self-authority, the home, the father, the mother, the church, the pastor, the elders, and the civil government, and we may call them congressmen or school board directors or anything in between. Those are all positions of authority created by God. Therefore, the pastor, in the preaching of the whole counsel of God, must speak about all of those. If he lets out any one of those, he is not of necessity by clear observation preaching the whole counsel of God. So it is as wrong for those any in the pulpit or for Christians generally to think that civil government or civil authority is any more off limit for discussion or involvement than it is for family authority, and that we shouldn't speak about the home and the role of the father and the mother, or self-government or self-authority, which is the basis for our republic. And I think when people understand that, Gary, it's kind of like the lights turn on. They say, wow, I never thought about it like that. And many pastors haven't thought about it, but it's authority given by God. He lays out the whole idea, and that is, in fact, exactly what the scripture talks about. And what we talked about in the first quarter hour, we are to be impacting that civil government side, that culture, and it is not politics. It is life. It is exactly what God created it to be.
That's very good. And Dave, before we go into this next break, I want to ask you, is there any biblical precedent for preachers to be involved in government to the degree that Brother Sam was talking about there?
Well, Gary, there's a lot of places we could go, but if you look in the Old Testament, God's prophets were men who addressed the nation. They were men who preached God's truth directly to governmental leaders. So there was a component there that was very, very much evident in the scriptures. Also, Gary, if I could just say this from strictly a historical perspective, the colleges of most of our founding fathers, that is the universities from which most of our founding fathers graduated, were primarily seminaries. Princeton, Harvard, Yale. At that time, at the founding of our nation, these colleges that are totally secular now were seminaries for training men to go into the ministry. So there was a component back in the founding era that was far more biblical in its approach than what we have allowed this thing to become. So yeah, biblically, historically, there's plenty of precedent for this kind of thing.
I know, ladies and gentlemen, that a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, Brother Sam and I were involved in a meeting, and we were talking about the fact that it would be great if God would raise up a president in the United States of America who would be one who would preach righteousness and truth and would be capable of leading America back to God by way of real repentance and commitment. And, that's very biblical. That's extremely biblical, and I just encourage each and every one of you to pray that maybe the Lord will do that. Of course, we'll be talking more about that as time goes on. Anyway, we're going to take a break, but we will be back right after this with more Stand in the Gap Today. Don't you go away. We have a lot more to talk about today.
Kings or Parliament could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and Lord of all the earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. They are created in us by the decrees of Providence, which establish the law of our nature. They are born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. A quote from John Dickinson, 1804.
Fox News Radio, I'm Paul Stevens. President Obama speaking to reporters, wrapping up the G7 summit in Germany, touching on U.S. support and training for Iraqi forces battling ISIS militants. The U.S. looking for Iraqi commitments on
how recruitment takes place, how that training takes place. And so the details of that are not yet worked out.
President Obama meeting earlier with Iraq's prime minister. South Carolina grand jury indicting a white former police officer, 33-year-old Michael Slager, on murder charges in connection with the April shooting death of Walter Scott, an unarmed black man.
As a prosecutor, if we can have a case that depicts the crime and we aren't having to rely just on people's perceptions, the jury will be able to make up their own mind after seeing the video and hearing other testimony.
Ninth Judicial Circuit Solicitor Scarlett Wilson, Michael Slager facing 30 years to life in prison if convicted. Fox News, we report, you decide.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
On June 8, 1845, Old Hickory died. Wounded by a sword during the Revolutionary War, he later fought the Seminole Indians and in the War of 1812 defeated the British at New Orleans. He was governor of the Florida Territory and is credited with having proposed the name Tennessee at that state's first convention. His beloved wife Rachel died just 3 months before he took office as the 7th President of the United States. His name, Andrew Jackson. In reference to the Bible, President Jackson stated, "That book, sir, is the rock upon which our republic rests."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Stand in the Gap Today. And on behalf of Dave Kistler and Sam Rohr, I am Gary Dull. And we are delighted to have you there as well. We've got something that's very, very concerning that we want to talk about here in this segment. And it's something that some of us have suspected for quite some time. But it's becoming more and more of an issue. It's becoming more and more public, and that is the idea that a smoking gun document is said to prove Obama-Muslim Brotherhood ties. Now, we've talked about that for a long, long time, not only on this program, but on the predecessor of this program called Freedom Focus. And the information that I have before me says that, and this comes out of Washington, that the White House isn't commenting on the exposure of a secret presidential directive. But critics tell WND, that's World Net Daily, it confirms what they feared, and that is that the Obama administration has an official policy of backing so-called moderate Islamists, including the jihadist group, the Muslim Brotherhood. The article goes on to say that a source familiar with the document told the Washington Times that the policy of backing the Muslim Brotherhood is outlined in a secret directive called Presidential Study Directive. And, of course, the article goes on to say that the governments of Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the United Arab Emirates officially consider the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization. But the presidential directive reportedly shows the White House considers the group a moderate alternative to ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Sam, this is very, very serious. It's very, very concerning. And I'm wondering what your comments are on this very, very serious issue that's coming from the Obama administration these days.
Well, Gary, I think it is serious, and it ties in with, as you said, things we've talked about on this program, and many, many, many others across the country have been coming to from the standpoint of observation and making what I would determine to be logical conclusions, meaning how many times have we heard that this administration, in fact, seems to be coddling Islamic behavior, yes, appears to have an effort to push back against ISIS, but very clearly has been very, very favorable to the Muslim Brotherhood, with Hillary Clinton having her advisor and them being within the White House, and people have seen the articles where they're embedded even within Homeland Security. These folks from Muslim Brotherhood. And there's been an effort by the administration to not at all talk negatively about them and so forth. And so those suspicions, those observations have been increasingly made. I think the identification of this particular document, it's not a wonder to me that the White House has not commented at this point, and I think that you probably will hear something at some point from it where they'll probably take and spin it into something else. But the fact of the matter is they have been following the presence of the Brotherhood. And if people are listening here, remember when the White House worked to undercut the President Mubarak in Egypt, they actually worked with great purpose to install a Muslim Brotherhood leader. And the Egyptian military, knowing, because of what that article just said there, recognizing these guys as a terrorist organization, and again, the Muslim Brotherhood there were going around killing Coptic Christians, and the government stepped in and they threw them out. Well, this administration has been hostile towards the government of Egypt because they threw out their people. So when this document says, in fact, there is a working relationship, I think it does connect some of those dots which have been so very obvious by observation. It's very, very concerning. It does not surprise me or those I think who are watching, Gary, but it does raise the ante from the standpoint of really what Congress ought to be doing, in my opinion, relative to doing things to curtail and to call back this president and his foreign policy actions, because it very clearly is out of character, out of line with American security and the defense of our republic.
You know, I want to step back just a little bit, Dave Kistler, because we shouldn't assume things on this program. Why don't you share with our audience just a little bit about what the Muslim Brotherhood is all about? We talk about that. We use that expression. It's in the news a lot. But what is the Muslim Brotherhood? And then after you give a brief description of that, share with our people how you and I have found out that the Muslim Brotherhood really is in high places down around Washington, D.C., particularly in the Congress. If you could share that, I'd appreciate it, Dave.
Well, Gary, I'd be delighted to. The Muslim Brotherhood, Gary, is an organization that has recognized terror ties. Going all the way back, Gary, and this is going to be a little bit of merging of the two things you've asked of me. You will remember, Gary, it's been a what, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, we were in Washington, D.C. on another matter, and there was a group of Coptic Christians across the street from the White House in Lafayette Park, and they were peacefully present. And as we walked through there, we were stopped twice. You were stopped once. I was stopped once by different people. They aimed to get the president.
Yeah, for some reason, we are. Dave is breaking up there, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know why. That would be on the phone line. So until we get that straightened up, Sam, I'm going to basically ask you to give a description as to how the Muslim Brotherhood works. And, you know, perhaps we'll be able to get Dave back on the line to talk about how we have found out that it's in high places in Washington, D.C. today. Sam?
Well, excellent, Gary. And I think the genesis of the Muslim Brotherhood is important to know. This comes back out of at the end of Second World War when Israel came into being there, and when the Ottoman Empire effectively back at that point was basically limited and were pushed back out of that, came a union between Islamic jihadist efforts and Marxism. Those two efforts coming together, because they worked in league, if people remember, back during the war. And they came out and they formed a union called the Muslim Brotherhood. So to say that the Muslim Brotherhood is somehow not dangerous, or that we can align with them, as the White House is saying, clearly calls anybody who understands to say, this is crazy, this is ridiculous. In real life, Gary, the Muslim Brotherhood tends to act as a background political entity that tends to, in many regards, work with and orchestrate the actions of many of these other groups, including ISIS and Hezbollah and these others. They are not independent. They just tend to be a different strategic arm, though the results of which are the same as these other groups, and that is Islamic domination with Sharia law being imposed worldwide. So that's why it is so critically terrible. And that is, in fact, where this embedded nature of many of these, some in Congress, many in staff positions, many appointments in various departments of the government, federal government in particular, are so disconcerting because they are not friends of ours.
You know, Sam, Michelle Bachmann basically believes that the White House really has the support of the Muslim Brotherhood, and, of course, has had the support of the Muslim Brotherhood ever since Barack Obama has been in the White House. Would you agree with her on that?
Well, you know, I mean, if folks remember, Michelle Bachmann got beat up by the press and others when she came out and identified early on in her role on the Foreign Relations Committee. She knew the information. She was aware of this, and part of what drove her even to run for president was she understood the embedded nature of this whole thing. She did attempt to bring it out. She did mention these things, and then so many just tried to beat her up and claim, you know, all kind of conspiracy theories. But she did comment on this release of this document and saying, this is exactly what I've been talking about. So, yes, it has been identified. But that's been my comment earlier. This Congress, if they continue to ignore this, Gary, it will be to the harm of every freedom-loving America. This is an effort that is embroiled and moved within this administration. How much more evidence do we need is what would be my question. I don't think we need any more evidence.
Well, it's pretty clear evidence, and we're getting close to our break here, but I hope we have Dave back. Dave, explain how we have learned that the Muslim Brotherhood really has embedded itself within Congress.
Well, Gary, there's two men that are in Congress right now, a gentleman named Andre Carson and one from Indiana, as well as Keith Ellison from Minnesota, both of whom are Muslims. And Andre Carson has direct ties. There's a complete dossier on his relationship with Muslim Brotherhood entities, and he has also just been recently appointed to the House Intelligence Committee. Now, think of that. That's like
we're going to stop right there, Brother Dave, because we're coming up on the break. We'll pick this up right after this. So, ladies and gentlemen, please do not go away. We will be back with more right after this from Stand in the Gap Today.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
As Christian financial advisors, we hold a biblical worldview and teach stewardship as a lifestyle. For over 30 years, we have taught families how to apply God's Word to our daily lives. Our three-day stewardship lifestyle seminars are held in Bible-teaching churches across America. We go far beyond basic budgeting and dig into the meat of Scripture. We believe that principle without application often lead to frustration. This is Roy Russell with the Life Financial Group in Douglasville. We are just west of Pottstown on Route 422. Visit our website or read our weekly blog at thelifegroup.org. There you'll find videos and PowerPoints for our ministry to the local church. In addition to investing and actively managing over $100 million, we prepare hundreds of tax returns for believers around the area. Come in for a second opinion and see how a biblical worldview can positively affect your investing and financial planning. Call us at 610-385-4500. That's 385-4500 or on the web at thelifegroup.org.
Securities offered through Genius Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. It seems that just about every day now, there's another story in the news that gives evidence that there are greater challenges happening to our religious liberty all across America. One example, an enlisted Marine corporal was court-martialed for displaying a Bible verse on her desktop computer, something she was told by her superiors is an affront to, quote, good order and discipline. Unbelievable. Another example is the case of Atlanta Fire Chief Kelvin Cochran, fired from his post for writing a men's Bible study book that a member of city council took offense to. Chief Cochran will be speaking in Lancaster this Thursday night at Lancaster Bible College, and if you're interested in hearing his compelling story, give Dan a call at our office at 1-800-FAMILY-1.
The Pennsylvania Family Institute. Protect the family, preserve the future. You can follow Michael Gear online at Twitter and Facebook or stay up to date on our website at pafamily.org.
The book of Nehemiah records an amazing story of how Nehemiah accomplished great things against all odds. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. Though we have great national concerns today, all Israel had even greater concerns. A collapsed nation, a destroyed temple, a sacked capital, walls torn down, city gates burned with fire, the people living as captives in foreign lands. Yet God was mightily at work. First the enemy, King Cyrus himself, said he was moved of the Lord to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem, and he sanctioned the work. Then God raised up necessary leaders, the elders, priests, Ezra, volunteers, and then Nehemiah. Nehemiah's task? To organize the physical work of laying new foundations, rebuilding broken walls, and all in the face of enormous opposition. But Nehemiah did the work because he could say with confidence, "The good hand of my God is upon me." I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, saying, be encouraged. Can you say with Nehemiah that God's good hand is on you? Because that's the key.
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Stand in the Gap today, and I want to apologize for some of the technical issues we are having today. Do not know why that's the case, but I guess that's the way things are these days. I know, Sam, you are there, and I think you can hear me clearly. There has been an article that has gone out by Wayne Root that was on the Blaze that basically says that Obama is doing what he can to destroy this nation. Wayne Root, of course, was a classmate of Barack Obama at Columbia University, the class of 1983. And Root goes on to say in an article that we have that, and I quote, "We were taught a plan back then to collapse the United States economy and destroy this country. It was called the Cloward-Piven Plan. The Cloward-Piven Plan involved using spending, entitlements, debt, and crisis after crisis to overwhelm the system, distract and overwhelm the citizens, and cause the collapse of America. At that point, the people would be on their knees begging for big government to save them from drowning. They'd willingly accept a socialist nanny state without argument or debate under duress." I think we can say that we can see that taking place all around us today. But to get to the real question, Sam, do you believe that Barack Obama is out to destroy the United States of America as we know it today?
Gary, I'm going to split that question up just a little bit. You ask a very direct question. I'm going to say, I think without equivocation, that the practices and the policies and the actions of this president are, in fact, in nearly perfect alignment with that strategy that you laid out. Now, I am very cautious when I try to ascribe to anybody's actions a motive. And I think we all have to be very careful of that. However, when actions lead in a certain pattern, and when they fit a clear grid, and all of those pieces are in alignment, it's kind of like the old thing, if it looks like a duck, and it walks like a duck, and it quacks like a duck, then it's a duck. It's that kind of thing that I think a logical, reasonable person, and in most law cases, the sort of reasonable person or the prudent person perspective that often is brought into litigation efforts, would a reasonable person be led to conclude these things? Would a prudent person be led to conclude? And I would say, yes. I don't know how one could lead to come to any other conclusion with that. Now, that being said, Gary, that is a very, very, very serious conclusion to which a person can come. And in our position as preachers on this program, we are not here to raise faulty accusations. We are not here to do spurious comments like many radio programs and radio show hosts, I think, do. But we are to take truth, biblical truth, and objective truth, and overlay it on, in fact, what is happening, and then from that draw a conclusion. And that's why I tried to answer that question very carefully. But if you were to take and put these evidences into a matter of a grand jury, an honest grand jury that would be there to evaluate these things, I think any logical person under that setting would have to come to the conclusion of saying, I don't care what you say, I know what is happening, and this administrative policies and so forth with this broader administration certainly fall in that category. And of course, Gary, that is the role of Congress. And we talked about the word impeachment and that kind of thing. Are there many things that the president has done and this administration has done worthy of impeachment? The answer is yes. Well, what actually is impeachment? It's actually the Congress, the House, actually putting together a grand jury, effectively made up of the members, by which they bring to light certain things that are happening and allow the light of day to expose actions, and then to say, what would a reasonable, prudent person say and believe? And that is what my complaint has been, is that our Congress is not doing what they're supposed to be doing, because had they done that or be doing that, Gary, the citizens of America would not be forced to come to the kinds of conclusions or whatever we're talking about, it would already be done within the setting of authority by people who actually can really do something about it. And, of course, our founders put this into the Constitution. That was their recipe, and it was to bring to light these kinds of things, Gary, and then purposely make the official connection and the causation and then how to deal with it.
Well, you know, it just goes back to the fact that we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And if this government is going to function effectively, we need to understand the Constitution. We need to understand the Declaration of Independence. And we need to keep after our congressmen and our senators to do the work of the people that they are elected to do. But, Dave, I hope we have you back in a clear signal here. If you are, I'd like for you to answer or at least comment on this idea about Barack Obama changing our nation. You know, when he ran back in 2007, he basically said that he wanted to redirect or change this nation fundamentally. And that's really what he's doing. He made the statement. We are just following up on it.
Well, Gary, I understand Sam's concern, and he's 100% correct. There are a lot of people out there that make spurious accusations without having any substantive evidence. But, Gary, I'm going to say this. When it comes to this Islamic component, there is plenty of evidence out there that would indicate that the president is, at the very least, sympathetic, if not much more than that, complicit, and maybe even more sinister elements than that are part of what he would like to see happen in the United States. When it comes to him fundamentally changing America, all you have to do is watch even what he did today at the end of this G7 summit, where he did an unprecedented thing. He called out the Supreme Court relative to the pending decision that they are yet to reveal relative to Obamacare subsidies, and did something no president has ever done, chastised them publicly for a decision that they have not yet announced. When has a president done that? And he's done that repeatedly, called them out in a State of the Union address, and just on and on and on this president goes, usurping what he perceives to be his power and his authority over the other two branches of government. And, Gary, it is beyond concerning.
Well, it is. And, you know, I recall that he called them out. He called the Supreme Court justices out in a State of the Union address here a couple of years ago. And Judge Alito has never been back to a State of the Union address since.
Well, he's not, Gary, and he sat there the entire time during that that little episode and shook his head at the president and muttered some things under his breath. I mean, this is absolutely bordering on traitorous, some of the things that this president's doing.
Well, it is. And ladies and gentlemen, that's the reason why we encourage you to continue to listen to this program. We try to approach everything that we talk about from truth, biblical truth, constitutional truth, truth, and with great integrity. Our time is up for today. The Lord willing, we will be back again tomorrow. Until then, on behalf of Sam and Dave, I'm Gary Dull, saying stand in the gap for faith and freedom. Keep looking up, for we know the best is yet to come. God bless you, folks. Have a great day.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
A
wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government, taken from Thomas Jefferson's first inaugural address, March 4, 1801. Without God, liberty will not last, a quote from Thomas Jefferson.